This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree Payments. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. And by Harry's, for guys like you who want a great shave experience at a fraction of what you're paying. Go to Harry's.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code WhatTheTech when you check out.
What the Tech?
Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Tarrant. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
I see you've your house is intact right now. That room has not been demolished.
No. The windows in my office were done previously, so we're all set there. But there's someone here today replacing windows.
So you got your roof done. You're getting your windows done. Think of how much money you're going to save next winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
this is a lot of stuff is overdue. Like the windows and the roof have needed to be replaced for years, you know. And then last winter sealed it because we got water damage everywhere.
Jeez. Yeah, I'm in the same boat here. A lot to talk about today. Yep. A lot of earnings this week. And it speaks volumes about the changes in technology and how, you know, things are changing over at Apple. A lot is changing over at Microsoft. We're going to talk about all that. But before we do that, Paul, we should talk about our friends, and that's Braintree. Look at this. I'm so unprepared here. Look at that. I pulled up every single one except the right one. There you go. This episode is brought to you by Braintree. Guys, if you are looking for a mobile payment solution, and I know a lot of you guys out there are developers, you guys have businesses, and a company like this is beneficial for you because it's one stop for you. You don't really have to put together 5,000 different payment methods. So what does Braintree do? So let's say it's next year or maybe next week, and there's a whole new way to make payments, to accept payments. Maybe it'll be the next Bitcoin. Maybe it's the next Apple Pay. Maybe it's the next Android Pay. Every single week, you're seeing more and more of these different payment solutions come around. Samsung Pay has become a big thing now. Now you're hearing that some of the carriers want to get into their own payment systems. Fortunately, Braintree is a full-stack payment platform, so it's easily adaptable to whatever the future holds for you. So you can easily adapt to it. You could accept everything from pounds to PayPal to Bitcoin to the next big innovation from any device with just one integration. And when that new payment method comes around, you don't have to think about it. You just update a couple lines of code, and you're ready to go. BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. You could give it a shot. That's BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. You could give it a shot. Take your business to the next level. If you're a developer, take the business that you're working on to the next level. Accepting mobile payment is the future of this. Phenomenal company. It's a PayPal company, so you know that they're going to be here for a while. BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. I want to thank Braintree for supporting the show and, of course, for supporting the GFK network. So, Paul,
Yes, sir. Where
do you want to begin today? Couple things here. And I wrote to Paul, I go, Paul, what do you want to talk about? You go, PC market is dying.
Yep.
That's exactly the voice I imagined when you wrote that.
Well, it just seems like there's been a couple of stories lately that have coalesced into the kind of the same thing, you know?
Yeah. So how do you want to go about this? Because what do you mean? It's a slow death. It's slowing down.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
It's going to be a very slow
it's
death.
It's a wasting disease. Yeah.
Yeah. But what do you mean that it's dying? In what way are we talking about that it's dying? Is it dying for enterprises? Is it dying for the consumer? Yeah. You know, we talk about
it being a mobile world. Maybe dying isn't the right word, right? I think the way maybe to think of this is the traditional PC market, as we've come to understand it over 30 years-ish, is being phased out. And it doesn't, you know, it's like any other kind of market death. It doesn't mean everything stops. Hard stop, and it just ends, you know. There'll always be some, well, not always, but for the foreseeable future, there will be some form of, you know, traditional PC going forward for some quite some time. But, you know, things are changing, right? And I think you and I had talked about this. The extinction event was the iPhone, right? And it all ties back to the iPhone.
Yeah.
And disruption always comes from an unexpected place, right? In other words, Microsoft and the PC maker partners were never going to innovate their way out of the PC market because it was a good market for them. It worked. It requires someone who's not getting that piece of the pie to disrupt that market, right? And Apple, which didn't see really any materials, Apple, which wasn't successful enough with the Mac to disrupt the PC market, went in a different direction because they saw great success with devices. And now that everyone is emulating Apple, we see disruption on a number of levels, right? Obviously, there are smartphones, which I think is the biggest one. There are tablets, which are not necessarily going to take over for PCs, but are taking a market away from PCs.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's enough to notice.
Yeah. And then you have a company like Google who approaches this problem from the other angle from Microsoft, which is they see everything from sort of a cloud perspective. And they create something that I think a lot of Windows fans would make fun of in Chrome OS and the Chromebook. But what's interesting about that stuff is that too has the ability to be very disruptive, even though to date it really hasn't been, except maybe in the U.S. education market. And what I mean by that is, for the same reason that a tablet might be or a phone might be a better outlet for personal computing activities, especially consumption activities, a Chromebook ultimately may prove to be a better solution for productivity-focused personal computing activities because it's simpler than Windows.
It is simpler. So
because it doesn't have the legacy, you know, cruft of Windows.
So right now, there's one right on therot.com. If you go there, you have an article about the new HP Chromebook 13 for business. Do you think business is going to adapt this? I mean, is this a reality that you're going to see enterprises, businesses adapting and distributing these Chromebooks for what reason? You know, for what reason would they want to do this?
Oh, well, cost, ease of management, cost, and cost, you know, because that's how businesses think. The thing to understand is I know there are people out there right now, especially if there's anybody who's in IT who's shaking their head thinking, oh, this is never going to happen. You know, every major transition in technology has occurred. Well, I shouldn't say it like that. Many transitions have occurred with the new thing taking on the abilities of the old thing in interesting ways. So for example, one of the very first hardware product that Microsoft ever made back in the day was a Z80 CPM board for the Apple II, right? That Microsoft saw the Apple II as a disruption of sorts in the then nascent, you know, personal computing market. But by adding this board to the computer, they were able to add the business-oriented capabilities that other types of customers would be attracted to. And so they turned this thing, which was sort of an enthusiast tool at the time, into a business tool.
Into something that's functional, yeah.
And this happens, you know, along the line, down the road. I mean, Microsoft was very concerned about being compatible with networks back in the early 1990s because those were the standard. After Microsoft went the Active Directory route and TCP/IP became the primary networking form in home and work networks, you know, that kind of went away. But to get their foot in the market, they had to be compatible with whatever the standard was at the time. Apple has created bootcamp technologies on its Mac, so that you could run Windows on the Mac, and other solutions for virtualization have appeared by third parties where you can run Windows applications directly in Mac OS X. You know, these are the inroads, you know, that allow these changes to come. Actually, a better example on the Apple side might be Apple wanted to make the transition from, you know, the classic versions of Mac OS to Mac OS X. And so they allowed those systems to run side by side on the same computer.
Yeah.
They allowed you to run classic Mac apps under Mac OS X, and they provided bridge technologies. I'm going to get the name wrong, but it was like Cocoa and Carbon.
I
think Carbon was the bridge technology. And the point of the Carbon technologies was bring some form of OS X compatibility, feature compatibility, function compatibility to classic Mac apps, so that they would be a little more native feeling under the new OS. right?
Yeah.
You can see that in the bridge technologies that Microsoft is doing now. They, and you know, they're trying. It doesn't mean they're going to be successful, but the idea is let's literally bridge the gap between these different technologies and allow people to create, developers to create these universal Windows platform apps that maybe came from iOS or from Android or from the web or from classic Windows or whatever. And sorry, this was a 2,000 word answer to a very simple question. But when you
it's not simple at all. There's multiple reasons why certain things are happening.
Yeah. So Chromebook, it's very interesting to me. This is not actually just HP that's doing this, but HP is doing this with a Windows Phone device that's coming out later this year as well. In other words, you have this new thing. It's completely incompatible with the old thing. So how do you make it compatible? And the way that businesses do this, which is different from the way that individuals would do this, is they have these big data centers that have infrastructure, and they can run Windows in the data center and then remotely project either the entire Windows environment or just individual apps down to a client that is something completely different. It could be a Mac, it could be Chromebook, it could be even a Windows Phone running, you know, with Continuum.
So what is HP doing exactly right now to integrate the Microsoft, you know, universe?
Yeah. So on the phone side, what they're doing is they're working with, in their case, third party solutions like Citrix and Microsoft's on remote desktop. They have their own infrastructure they're creating so that it doesn't really matter what you're using on the back end. It will just work. And the idea is that you've got this Windows Phone that's running on ARM that's completely incompatible with desktop applications. But when you connect it to a Continuum dock, whether it's a little laptop type thing or a screen with a keyboard and a mouse like you'd use with a PC, you can run actual PC applications, Chrome, iTunes, Photoshop, whatever. They're not running natively on the device. They're running remotely up in a data center. You're using remote desktop essentially to get to them. Now, for Chromebook and just for Chrome on the browser as well, I would imagine, there are plugins that allow you to do the same thing. And so Citrix has just updated their plugin for this. Citrix is a big player in this space.
What is it? Citrix Receiver, right? I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, that's right. And lots of businesses use this technology. In the old days, you might have used it to bring like data, you know, Windows applications, let's say, down to a thin client. And you know, Chromebook is essentially a thin client.
Yeah.
Windows Phone is essentially a thin client. You could even use it on a full-blown Windows desktop that was a different version of Windows, but you needed backwards compatibility with some Java/IE/line of business app, whatever it is. You could use it for that purpose as well. But, you know, ultimately what this stuff allows you to do is transition from something old to something new. The goal isn't to keep that old solution running forever. The goal is to keep it running for now because that's what your users are used to. But long term, you're looking down the road to something different. And so I don't know of any large scale Chromebook deployments in businesses, but it is very notable to me that in the past, I don't know, 6 months-ish, Dell, HP, and Acer, and Lenovo, I'm not 100% sure, but I know they have Chromebooks. But those three companies, at the very least, have all released business-focused Chromebooks, right? And so we'll see. They're kind of testing the waters. But I think when you look at the PC market, you've got Windows and PCs being attacked on three sides. More than three sides. Let's say multiple sides, right? You've got this Chromebook thing, which is a PC-like experience, but less expensive with simpler management, but lower cost across the board. You've got Macs at the high end, very expensive. Basically a Windows PC type experience, but more expensive and less friendly in enterprise. But, you know, that stuff does exist. And then, of course, you've got the mobile devices, which are tablets and two-in-ones and smartphones too, right, of all kinds, which tend to be simpler than Windows, of course, because of their nature, but also less capable than Windows PCs. You know, they're under attack on all sides.
No, they really are. And it's interesting because if we spoke about this 2 years ago and we said, you know, PCs are under attack by Chromebooks, we would say, well, I don't think it's going to happen. But now you're seeing, you know, companies like HP and Toshiba and all these companies having a business-centric, you know, device being pushed. You know, I would imagine, and listen, I don't do any enterprise IT, but if you're a business, isn't it more manageable if everything is on the cloud? For you, because you're now managing everything instead of individual PCs managing everything. Well, you know, it may be a cheaper and smarter solution for you in the long run.
Yeah, so it's interesting. people tend to adopt these things quicker than businesses. Well, people tend to do everything quicker than businesses. But a lot of the pushback that you see from IT and from enterprises is because there are people with a vested interest in their careers and in the things that they have knowledge about, right? I mean, they're not necessarily making the right decision for the company. They're making the right decision for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be fair to these people too, I would say, you know, the Microsoft enterprise type solutions obviously are more powerful, more full featured. That, you know, there's more going on there. I mean, and that stuff is valuable. But in many ways, I just have a hard time believing that the trends you see on the consumer side aren't going to happen on the business side. It's just going to take longer. And so you're going to get pushback from businesses on things like Chrome OS, like we saw with Android and iPhone, although that's kind of disappeared. And eventually maybe that pushback goes away. I think that's the hope that the company, there's a reason HP just came out with a business Chromebook, right?
They're not just making it.
I mean, they are kind of, I'm sure part of it is testing the waters, but you know, we'll see what happens, you know, when Dell and or Acer and or HP or whatever updates these things or adds different models.
I think the major tell is going to be when all these Android applications are running on Chromebooks. You know, that's going to play a major part because you could create one application for your business, a custom application, and have it running on every one of these devices.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I was writing about the tablet market today, and one of the things that kind of occurred to me when the iPad Pro first came out, I ridiculed it and hard. You know, I was really, I really pointed out effectively, I think, that Apple themselves had a hard time explaining the purpose of this device. I quoted different Apple executives, all of who gave contradictory answers about why this thing existed.
Yeah.
It's clearly a Surface ripoff of sorts. As the iPad Pro is to Surface, you know, so was the iPad to the original tablet PC. I mean, it's a simpler thing. It's, you know, a mobile app platform. It's not, a legacy desktop system. But you know what? When you think about tablets today, there are these consumption tablets, the Amazon stuff, the normal iPads, the Samsung stuff for the most part. And then there are the productivity tablets, Surface, the Pixel C, the iPad Pro. Microsoft's is unique in that it's the only one, and the other PC-based tablets, in that it's a pure productivity machine. It's really a PC, right? I mean, by virtue of the fact that the mobile app solution on Windows isn't any good, those things are literally PCs and have most of the same issues that you would have with any PC compared to a mobile device, because there are no good mobile apps and there's no big app platform. No, the ecosystem is terrible. It's probably going to be easier. In fact, it's almost certainly going to be easier for Apple with the iPad Pro or Google with the Pixel C and other devices, Google with Android, let's say, to move those platforms up into productivity than it's going to be for Microsoft to move Windows down into consumption. I think Microsoft is kind of stuck. And I think that's why they did Windows RT, by the way. They were trying to do a pure play consumption platform that was still, you know, compatible with the normal stuff, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
My point being, I'm sorry, just simply that I feel like the iPad Pro as it stands today is a waste of time as a productivity machine for most people. I mean, obviously some creatives love it and all that stuff. But I think it's going to be easy for Apple to improve that situation, add windowing, add a cursor with a mouse,
And then everything changes with that, right? It's a different device then.
They could kill the laptop right now. You know, if they need a better type cover, I mean, that's garbage, you know, but you know what? They'll fix this stuff. And that type cover to me, whatever they call it, it reminds me of the first iPad cover, which was awful. But then remember the iPad 2 came out and they started doing the magnetic thing.
Yeah,
and
they got it right.
And it's magical. Yeah. And it's magical.
You know?
And I think they have that capability. So we'll see.
I'm gonna give you an example on moving away from Windows on a smaller scale because we were talking about this. I have a friend that has a very successful business here in New York. They're claim adjusters pretty much. And his company does, he's hired by insurance companies and leasing companies to come and adjust the car, you know, to evaluate the damage to the car. And I was having a drink with him, and we were talking about technology and stuff like that because he actually listens to the show. And he said, this is a couple of weeks ago, he goes, you know, we don't use laptops anymore to send our reports. I go, well, what are you doing? He goes, we're using Android phones. I go, why Android? He goes, because it was cheaper to make an app.
Yeah.
It was way cheaper to make an app. So essentially what he did, he has an application that he mm-hmm. his IT guy has preloaded on all of them, an APK that's preloaded on all these phones. You log in with your username and password, and there's a little questionnaire. You take the pictures of the car, and you just automatically upload it. Rather than a claim adjuster having this big giant laptop with a 4G adapter connected to it and filling it out on a Windows computer, they don't use any computers anymore.
Yeah.
You're talking about 120 computers have been replaced. I mean, it's a much smaller scale, but it's a great example. And I go, why did you do it? He goes, it's totally manageable. They could do it from their phones.
Yeah, I think that's very common, actually. You know, it's easy for me because I'm a writer, right? I mean, I sit here with a keyboard all day long, and I really tend to think in terms of this stuff, you know, and it would be hard for me not to use something this powerful, I think, because I'm used to it, and that's, you know, there are always going to be people that prefer this stuff, developers for the time being. Although, by the way, if you don't think that app development is coming to iOS and Android, it's almost like you're not paying attention. Yeah. That will be the day that robots are making robots, right? I mean, that's what that kind of thing is. So it's going to happen. But, you know, we've talked, you and I, in the past about this notion of, as personal computing changes and you do less and less kind of consumption activities on a PC because it's easier and better to do them on mobile devices. Things like, you know, Facebook and email and web browsing and reading books and things like that, listening to music, whatever it is. The PC becomes a productivity tool. It goes back to its roots as, you know, productivity, essentially, what I think of as productivity. And I like that. I mean, there's a part of me that really likes that the PC is still an essential kind of a tool for that. But we've also talked about, like, you know, like my kids, for example, use Chromebooks or iPads and things like that. And as the soaring occurs upstairs, sorry.
Oh,
I don't
nice.
Have terrible gas.
It sounded like a plane was like a little like a Cessna was just going over your house.
No, he's soaring some. Sorry, I have good construction
no problem.
Happening.
Go ahead. It's not as bad as you think.
The thing I keep coming back to is that for a lot of normal people, right, just people, the instances in which you have to use a PC become less and less. Like I've talked about things like I have to print something or something. You know, that doesn't make a great case for a PC because – aside from the fact that obviously you're not going to replace PCs as often, you know, the Windows 7 PC from 7 years ago is going to work just fine today for that
good
purpose,
enough.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to scan something, you need to print something, whatever it might be. You need to use a full powered version of Microsoft Word because you're writing a report for school and you want to make sure every, you know, grammar, spelling,
and your 7-year-old machine that you're powering up every, you know, couple of days is more than enough for that.
It might be more, right, exactly. Yeah. But here's the thing. If you're only using something that infrequently and you only need it for such very specific tasks, couldn't you make the argument that a Chromebook would actually be better for that? It's going to be – you could buy a brand new one for a couple $100. It's going to last just as long. It gets updated all the time because everything runs on the web. You never have to worry about viruses or security software or – buzzing saws above your head. I don't know what that sounds like in your end, but it's really, he's like right above me. I'm sorry. It's like a large animal is dying.
Yeah, it sounds like a howling dog.
Like a mastodon
dog.
Was just taken down by a saber-toothed tiger. you know what I mean? Like, in other words, if this is a tool you use infrequently,
can't
you
replace it
with
something
simple? Why put up with the complexity? Like, why ever have complexity?
Yeah, I'm honestly starting to rethink my entire logic when it comes to computing and how we, as far as our audience and us, we are wrong. Yeah. We have this all wrong.
I think so.
What you're saying, I agree with. I'm saying in general, the mentality that, no, I got to have a computer. What do you mean I got to buy a computer every 5 years, 3 years? You know, you don't. A Chromebook is going to run HD video.
I just be clear. Yeah. I am not suggesting that anyone listen to this throwaway PC and buy a Chromebook. I don't mean it like that.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of these solutions are not quite there yet as well. I think it's a big part of it. I think that things like Chromebook, like you mentioned Android apps, are going to improve a lot in the future. I think that iPad Pro is going to improve a lot in the future. I don't mean I'm giving up on Windows. I'm going to go buy an iPad Pro and a Chromebook.
You're not, but you know what? Your neighbor might be, and your neighbor's neighbor might be.
The reason I'm having this discussion is that I do feel like a lot of people would be better served by that, or would feel like they would be better served by that. It doesn't really matter because I feel like that's the trend. So for me, personally, like you use a Mac, I use a PC. It doesn't matter.
Why do you have to say it still, like that? Why does it
have? I know it did kind of sound like a peanut butter thing, like two great tastes that go together. I didn't mean it like that. I mean, you and I use Macs and PCs. You know, they are legacy, kind of complex but powerful devices.
Yeah,
they are systems on which you could develop software. You can install Xcode or Visual Studio or whatever and develop apps. They are systems on which you could run virtualization and host other operating systems under the covers. They are systems on which you can attach giant screens and do, you know, all these things. They're very powerful.
Yeah.
And I feel like I need it for my job. You absolutely need it for your job. But we are the 1%.
Yeah, you're more comfortable. Listen, you could get away with not using a Windows-based machine. You could. You could still type and you could, but it would be a more difficult transition for you.
What kind of a sham?
Yeah, what kind of sham would you be?
That's like saying I'm going to start a Chevy blog.
Yeah.
But by the way, my car is a Ford Mustang.
Yeah.
You know, and no, but you should just trust me about Chevy because I know a lot about Chevy, but I don't actually use a Chevy.
We're saying as a general writer, right?
Yeah.
That's what you do for a living. You could technically have a tablet with a keyboard, or you could have a Chromebook and still write. And you know what? You probably will write exactly the way that you do it. But it's a little things. It's a little adjustments that'll make it a little harder for you.
Look, right. Anytime you spend all day doing a particular thing, right, the change is hard. There's no doubt about it. This goes back 20 years, literally 20 years ago. There's a great and very small book written by Neil Stephenson called In the Beginning Was the Command Line.
Interesting.
And he writes he's a writer, like an actual writer. He doesn't write about technology, but he uses technology to write. And he wrote about a transition he made it back in that day from the Mac to Linux at the time. I don't know what he uses today. But he talked a lot about the computing systems of the day, many of which are not around anymore, like BOS and everything. And he evaluated all these different systems. And the reason he made this change was that he lost data when his Mac crashed and the Apple store the Apple dealer or the support place couldn't recover it for him. And he's like, this is never going to happen to me again. And he went down a very technical, esoteric path. I think the thing that's going to happen with people now is when their Mac or their PC crashes, whatever it is, or when it finally dies, or when it's too slow to use anymore, they've had these simple experiences on phones and tablets, and they're going to think a little differently about that purchase the next time, especially if they find out that, oh, by the way, and I've done this here in my house, you can print from Android to a printer on a network. That works. You can print from Chromebook, obviously. Probably could figure out how to print from an iPad. I'm sure there are compatible printers. I don't know how that works.
You know,
but
you know, we're also approaching a strange period where things that you do on mobile, you cannot do on a PC anymore, right? Great example. Yeah. On a much dumber, smaller scale on the consumer level, mm-hmm. Instagram, for example, right?
Yeah.
It's
really not even there.
Right? You could view images. You could like images, but you can't post images. And these are the things that are going.
A lot of the chat apps are like that as well.
Chat apps also, right? It's a limited experience. So
it's so different from the past.
And it was never like that. It was full. No matter whatever you got, the app was based on whatever your PC experience was initially.
Yeah.
You know, you
yeah.
look at applications like Skype or even Facebook. Facebook, you do. I think we're approaching this transition where the application on mobile is front and center, and the desktop is forgotten. You know, there are so many times that I go on, I would like to upload an image on Instagram with my PC, but I can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless you're going through some sort of weird method of doing it, it's possible, but you really can't do it.
I'll do this on the PC sometimes because what I want to do is on a big screen, look through pictures and say, okay, these five, I'm going to put those up. I mean, you could do it on a phone, but sometimes, you know, it.
By the way, now you can on Windows 10, right? Because Instagram is on Windows 10 now.
Only on mobile.
Only on mobile.
Yes. It's just crazy.
It's a very interesting transition, but he's a great case for the Chromebook. You buy a Chromebook, you have the Android app for Instagram on there. Guess what? You could probably upload images.
Sure.
You have the WhatsApp app. WhatsApp app. Right?
Yep.
Okay. You have the WhatsApp app on Chromebook. It's a possibility. So now you have your application there. For some people, the user experience on a Chromebook will be truer to their normal everyday functions. That's the weird transition that we're in for the consumer. You know, if I know that I could also have Instagram on my computer and I don't have to take my phone out to do it, I may be more inclined. I mean, it's a silly thing, but just on the dumbest and lowest end of the thought process, it's things like that that may be a threat to the PC in the long run if they don't get their act together when it comes to all these platforms.
There's a lot of, I mean, there's so much that goes into this. I mean, you know, the bad experience that people have with crapper on a PC, I think, eats away at people. The fact, you know, her, the woman who used to be our babysitter for the kids when the kids were younger, we were talking to her the other day, and she was very proud of the fact that she bought a new computer. She didn't ask me about it. She's like, I thought about it. I didn't want to bother you, but I just, you know, want to see what you think about it and what I did. But she's like, I did this. She says, I didn't know that Microsoft Word didn't come with Windows. I had to buy that. And then she said, but I, she said, she was really proud of herself. She said, I bought McAfee all by myself.
You know, oh my God.
Oh boy. That's too bad. You know, the truth is the way she is, I mean, she probably does need that extra bit of protection, but, you know, this is an interesting commentary on the PC, right? You know, she wants this big screen thing, and I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know. She might be just generationally old enough that she's got music and iTunes and she tends to think of the world that way, and she can't afford a Mac, and so a PC is it, right? Because iTunes is never hitting Chromebook, obviously.
But does does iTunes ever have to come to Chromebook?
No, God, dear God, it does not. In fact,
you see how terrible it is on Windows.
Yeah, it's so much better to deal with if you have a phone or an iPad, I guess, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just weird. I mean, I don't know. I've always sort of felt like, I mean, for a long time now, you can sort of see these changes coming. And I always felt like the phrase like post-PC world was indeed at the time very premature. But, you know, maybe to be fair to Apple or to Steve Jobs even, as he was so frequently, he was on to something. Like, he was early, right? It was like, you know, taking the floppy disk out of the first iMac, and everyone cheers that when, in fact, a floppy disk was the best-selling accessory for the iMac. But you know what? You kind of need that kind of forward-thinking kick in the ass sometimes just to make things happen. And so, you know, I think they went a little early on post-PC when they came out with the first iPad. And obviously the way the iPad is seen declining sales over 9 consecutive quarters now. I mean, it's not like it's gone gangbusters and taken over the PC market. But
it's taken over something.
It's a long-term play. Like, this is not something that's going to be a failure in the long run.
No.
It's not a failure. It's not a failure. I think
tablets have totally slowed down PC sales.
Oh, they have, yeah.
You know, not necessarily that you're never going to buy a PC ever again, but you're not going to buy one every 3 years because you don't have to.
Yeah.
Because our daily computer usage has been dumbed down. It's a much simpler way of doing things. You don't need Photoshop anymore to edit a photo. And you never did, but
why would you? Yeah, exactly. Why? It's sad that you ever needed to.
You never needed to. But you know what? You know what people want to do? They want to put filters. They want to put filters on photos. They want to crapify the photo. They want to cut the sides off. They want to put a heart sticker on the photo and share, you know, best friends forever. And you post that on Facebook. You do that all with your phone.
Even, you know, last weekend I spent a lot of time scanning old photos. And, of course, I use a PC for that. Somebody reached out to me from a company that does scanning software for iOS, which is freaky as it is.
Scanning software, what do you mean?
Like to scan things with a phone.
Oh, yeah, I do that all the time.
Well, but you wouldn't scan photographs. Like, in other words, you have photo albums from the past. You want to get them on into the cloud. You're not going to sit there with your phone and scan each photograph.
No, I do documents. I mean, who knows?
No,
but
of course,
I do
documents.
Yeah.
Yes. No,
we all but actually, that. Paul, why wouldn't you, right? Think about it this way.
No. Because over the course of 2 days, I scanned 650 photographs. And I don't want to do that with my phone. I don't want to hold my phone and move things. You know, like, it just doesn't make sense. But the thing that's interesting is, but that is itself a very specific task, right? This is not something people do all the time. So this is one of those edge cases, right? And even that has gotten a lot easier because back in the day, like with my previous scanner, I would scan, you could fit however many number of pictures on the surface of the scanner. you scan that whole thing, you crop each one.
Yeah, it was a disaster. Yeah. You had to select if you wanted to, what kind of format you wanted the photo to be in. Yeah,
this thing auto names them, auto crops them, straightens them. It just does all this stuff, and it's not even a particularly nice scanner. Yeah. It's just whatever, and it makes that process easier. But of course, it is itself a transition tool, right? It's a way to get from the old school way of doing things, which was literally paper in books that you store in your house. I equate it to being like the tinder for the fire that will eventually destroy my home. You know, is my photo albums down in the cellar. And I can get rid of those things. And then they can be in the cloud. And then guess what? I can enjoy them where I enjoy the photos of other kinds on my phone or on my tablet or projected onto my HD TV. You know, they're not hidden away.
Listen, you scan. Here's a great case. I mean, you scan it with your phone. And then if you're on Android, for example, it'll automatically upload it to the cloud. You don't even have to think about it. It's all done.
So the reason I wouldn't want that, well, because there must be a way to auto date things. Like my photo albums have a lot of them have pretty good records in them of when things were taken. And so one of the things I learned because I did download the Google Photos uploader tool, right, so I could get these things in the cloud quickly. But of course, they're tagged with today's date, not 1986's date or whatever. So you have to go in and make sure you change
in the album.
Date.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very interesting. I do want to actually. You touched on the tablet market falling, and we're going to take a little break. But I want to talk about Apple and the iPhone sales because it's the first time that they've actually sold less iPhones. Which I want to talk about that. But before we do, I want to thank our sponsor, of course, and that's Harry's. Guys, if you're looking for a great shave, check out Harry's.com. They do unbelievable stuff. So. I talk about this all the time. I absolutely hate shaving. It's a tedious task for me. And the reason why is because I leave a beard and I just clean it up a little bit. But if I use any of these mock whatever razors out there, I'm literally tearing my face apart. It's terrible. It's a terrible, terrible experience. But since I got my Harry's razor, guess what? Very easy, high quality blades, high performance German blades. And it is half the price of those other leading brands. If you go to harrys.com and use promo code WhatTheTech at checkout, you get $5 off your first purchase. They have a lot of, they have kits. They got, the handles. They got the blades. They got everything there. They're all full service shop over there. And they also deliver it to your door. No problem. Easy breezy, all done. Why pay $32 for 8 blades when you could get them for half the cost at harrys.com? Harrys.com, use promo code WhatTheTech. At checkout, that's HARRYS.com. Enter the code WhatTheTech at checkout to get $5 off. So some of the offers here before I wrap this up. Harry's, their starter set is called the Truman. It's just $15. You get a razor. You get the handle. You get the moisturizing shaving cream. And 3 of the Harry's 5-blade German engineered razors. So that's for $15. So why pay $30-something? Harry's.com. Use promo code WhatTheTech, get $5 off your purchase. I want to thank Harry's for supporting the show, for, of course, supporting the GFK network. So let's talk about these iPhone numbers.
Yep.
Are you surprised that they're low?
Well, I mean, they're 50 million is not low.
No, they're lower than...
in some ways, I guess they came in a little under expectations or whatever. But, I mean, 50 million iPhones, you know, so... There's been a lot of talk about peak iPhone and whether we've reached some kind of a weird point. But honestly, if you look at this in perspective, Apple is still riding atop the industry, right? I mean, and I don't mean that Apple sells more iPhones than any other company sells phones or whatever, but the iPhone is absolutely the best-selling smartphone model in the world by far. It's the most profitable, maybe the only profitable smartphone in the world. And their penetration in various markets is amazing. Like they're just, it's astonishing. And so at some point things have to slow down for them. Like emerging markets, you know, get filled up, like, you know, China, they've reached saturation there. They're looking at India as the next one, but India's a few years out. Even at reduced levels compared to last year's historic levels, Apple is still looking great. So I don't really, I don't see this as a huge
It's also not a problem. Big release. I think, listen, it'll be a big problem if the iPhone 7 comes out and sale numbers are lower than expected. That's when you start having some problems. But you're right. It's a matured market. You know, they're at, I'm surprised China has hit, you know, that wall so quickly.
Yeah, actually, I think they were surprised by that as well.
I'm curious about that. I guess, listen, majority of the market in China is Android anyway. So do you know, what's that market share in China? Do you know? Have they announced that?
I don't remember off the top of my head. It was pretty big.
Yeah.
But, you know, the problem Apple faces there is semi-unique because they're kind of perceived as a luxury aspirational brand. And it was one of those kind of cool, hip kind of things. And after a certain amount of time, I mean, that kind of thing kind of goes away. I mean, in the United States, an iPhone is not really a status symbol. It's just like everyone's doing it kind of a thing. It's kind of reached normal, you know, normal people just buy iPhones. You know, it's like the safe choice. So I don't see any huge. This had to happen at some point. You know, this kind of thing. It's only surprising maybe that it took so long, you know.
Yeah, it took a little bit. But, you know, now all these rumors are coming out for the next iPhone. And I was reading this article, I believe CNET posted, and they were talking about how it has to be a big device. Like, it can't be – there has to be some major changes, not the small evolutionary change that you get with these S lines. We have to see a major overhaul because almost every single manufacturer has a kick-ass flagship phone now. But
right.
I don't think it's net. Obviously, you have to constantly change. But for Apple, if you're in the ecosystem, you're in the ecosystem. I don't think Apple users are saying, well, you know, if they don't change it for the next one, I'm going over to Android.
Yep.
I don't think that's a thought that you know, iPhone users are having. And they shouldn't be having it. There's no reason for them to jump to Android. I don't, you know, you're going to see the changes come, but it's not a, you're not getting a big jump over to Android. I would be surprised if someone did, actually.
I mean, people must occasionally. I mean, I think there are tech focused people who you know, just get tired of the same old thing and want to move, you know, try something different, and I certainly understand that mentality. I do that myself, but I don't know. I find the iPhone to be cleaner and easier to use, and, you know,
easier to use. I'll tell you where they suck, though. They suck in the cloud computing.
Yes, they do.
It's terrible.
Not an area of expertise.
No, iCloud, I'm going to tell you, iCloud is absolutely terrible. It is terrible. When you talk about it not working, it's horrible. Things go missing. Things don't upload. I'm shocked that more people don't complain about it. And the reason why they don't is because nobody's using it. I don't think majority of iPhone users are paying that extra whatever for the 20 gigs or 100 gigs, whatever. They just have the standard 5 gigs and that's it. And then they max it out and they never even think about it. It's not even a thought that they have.
I actually paid extra for – I pay extra every month. And they only let you do this every month too, which is really irritating, but because you get an email every month reminding you of how stupid this is. But it's whatever the smallest bump is you can get on iCloud. It's probably some dumb little amount.
I
had to do it
because,
yeah. And it's literally for iDevice backups. That's the only reason I need it, because my kids both have iPhones and they both have iPads, and between their stuff and what I have, like, there just wasn't enough space to back up all these devices.
Yeah. Have you, I saw you posted it on Throat.com, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Dropbox's new placeholder.
Yep.
That they're going to be integrating? It's in the next, it's not integrated yet.
Oh, no, no. It might even not be happening very soon. It's some kind of a plan they've announced. And it was actually announced on their business blog. And that suggests to me it's something they're going to make available to the business customers first, which makes sense because their business customers can actually get unlimited storage and would have more of a need for this kind of a thing. But, of course, when I see something like this, what I think of is Microsoft.
Microsoft screwed this up.
Yeah, so screwed badly. The pooch in this thing, and like has no answer forthcoming about how they're going to fix this, because it's a very simple thing that anyone should understand. You've got a device. It doesn't matter what it is. A PC that has 256 gigabytes of storage. Well, if Microsoft's giving you a terabyte of storage up in the cloud, or Dropbox is giving you unlimited storage, you can't sync all of that storage if you're using it.
And most of the time, you don't want to. You don't want to sync all that stuff.
No. So there are two levels of control you can have over that. One is, I would say, probably all of these cloud storage providers, Google Drive, Amazon, Dropbox, Box, Microsoft, whatever, offer some form of selective sync, I would imagine. I'm sure they all offer this. And that's a UI. You pull up a window and you say, okay, I want this, I want this, I want this. And you check off the parts you're going to sync. And that helps solve the problem. But the problem with selective sync is from the PC or the Mac or whatever, you don't see everything that's up there. So you only see the selected parts that have synced. And so what Dropbox is going to implement, which is what Microsoft had before in Windows 8.1 with OneDrive, is the ability to navigate through your entire cloud storage contents using your PC and then arbitrarily decide what parts of it you want to bring down something that's synced for offline use.
So, question for
you,
Paul.
And it's so much better.
What was – I totally forgot at this point. Why was it removed?
Microsoft realized at some point – a couple of reasons. I mean, but – they needed to make a unified sync client that would work everywhere. And there were things about the placeholder system they had that were breaking things. But here's the best example. You could buy a mini tablet for Windows 10 now that comes with 16 or 32 gigs of storage.
Okay.
So if you had, I don't know the exact figure, but let's just make something up, like 3/4 of a terabyte of storage up in the cloud, just syncing the placeholder files exceeded the amount of storage you had on the device.
Okay, now I remember that.
You literally couldn't use it. Yeah. So it became untenable.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this wrong off the top of my head, but I think that in Dropbox's example, it was 10 terabytes of storage took up 20 megabytes of space on the PC.
That's
for placeholders.
So 10 terabytes.
It's in their blog post.
20,
maybe we should take my memory as... The point being that it's 20 megabytes is 3 or 4 MP3 files. it's no big deal.
Wait a minute. How many? You say gigabytes or megabytes?
Megabytes.
Oh, 20 megabytes.
Maybe we should look this up because I'm just saying I'm spouting numbers like I have a memory.
Okay, what you're saying is significantly smaller. Yeah, it's a much smaller platform.
10 terabyte. Sorry, here's the actual number because this shows you how my mind works. 10 terabytes of cloud storage translates to 28 megabytes worth of local placeholder files.
Yeah.
In other words, no problem.
Yeah.
No problem. This is the thing Microsoft couldn't figure out.
Dropbox figured it out.
Well, they say they have. We don't have it. Yeah. So we'll see if they actually...
Here's the thing. A couple of years ago, we had the discussion where, if Apple's doing iCloud on the Mac and Microsoft is doing OneDrive, then why the hell would you pay for Dropbox?
Well, I'll tell you why I pay for it.
Yeah,
because it's reliable and it's fast and it always works.
The biggest surprise is that they've survived. They've really adapted. And the discussion we were having is how they weren't giving enough storage and... Like, I used Dropbox years ago. I used to use it for all my photo backups and almost everything. Now I use, I've kind of split it between Google Photos, but I don't use iCloud at all on my Mac, ever. I pay for it for Justice Phone, but I never use it on my Mac. And I don't use OneDrive on my PCs. I use Dropbox on everything. I was very close to going over the OneDrive when... I saw the placeholder.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, I evangelized OneDrive. I thought it was the greatest deal in technology.
I thought so, too. I thought it was phenomenal.
Yep.
It just, sometimes you need a third party.
It made Office 365 a no-brainer. You get unlimited storage, placeholders, wonderful. It was wonderful. I put everything in OneDrive.
Yeah, it's a nice transitional moment for everything. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up? Before I go into a little...
Anything else I wanted to bring up?
Yeah. Before I go into something.
Anything else about the death of everything I care about? no, I pretty much covered it. It's kind of depressing. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I posted about some Amiga stuff on Twitter the other day. I don't know if you caught that. I went down to the cellar because that scanning thing is part of this everything must go, trying to get rid of crap kind of thing. And I pulled a box out and I actually found a bunch of Amiga stuff in there, including some handwritten notes that I had made about like tips for video games and some other stuff. But it's what it reminded me of was, you know, things change all the time, right? I mean, if you and I had been having this conversation 30 years ago, A, you would be a baby, and B,
you'd be talking. I would just be drooling.
Yeah, you would just be drooling. So not really, no difference.
I'd be 2 years old. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly. We're having the same discussion.
Yeah, but we would be talking. I mean, I'd be like the Amiga guy. I'd be so excited about the Amiga, and at the time, Microsoft to me would have been the company that made BASIC for the computers I used, right? Because they made BASIC on the Commodore computers, which I really liked actually, and they made BASIC on the Amiga. If we had had this conversation 20 years ago, I would have by then gone from being someone who in the early 90s hated Microsoft because I thought Windows was a joke to someone who felt like Windows 95 was the future of computing and that this was the path we were all going to go down. And of course, you know, in that case, I was correct where I wasn't about
the
Amiga.
You picked the winner there.
Finally.
Unlike that iPad.
It always helps to go with the winner, you know.
Yeah.
But the point of all this is just, you know, things change. You know,
a lot changes.
I used to play video games on computers. Now I only play them on consoles for the most part. Although I'm starting to look at computers again, right? Because of the stuff Microsoft's doing now. So, you know, things change. And I think the worst thing that we can do as people and the worst thing that we can do as people concerned about our careers, if you're in IT, is to get stuck in this notion that it has to stay the way it is now. Like, you don't want to get too comfortable with anything because things tend to change in technology in particular, right? I mean, I think that's the one most important thing to just remember this, you know?
Yeah.
You know, people are so concerned about Windows Phone, for example, or people still hold a grudge about Windows Media Center or about Zune or whatever. I mean, things change, you know.
I think it's the evolution of things. I'm trying to think how much has changed over the last 10 years. Like, we do this all the time, but I think when we approach the 10 year mark, like when we say like between 2010 and 2020, how much has changed? I think it's going to be a slowdown. But anything pre iPhone. It's a major change, major change from the way that we do things. And, you know, people held out for a long time. A lot of people still don't have smartphones. You know, like, and that's an amazing, amazing thing. I know a lot of people that still do not, they want nothing to do with a smartphone.
That itself is a change as well, because when people who tend to stay away from technology or tend to stay away from the latest thing or whatever do adopt technology, it's very interesting. I give you two examples off the top of my head that are very related because I grew up with both these people. The guy who's above my head right now who's sawing up there is a guy I went to high school with, Steve Boone, and he's a master carpenter. But he's done all of the woodwork stuff in my house over the years, put in our kitchen, et cetera, et cetera. He's great. You know, back in the day when he would show up with his saw horses and his saw and, you know, all the other stuff, he would bring a little portable radio and he'd plop it down on the grass or whatever. And he listens to radio when he works, whatever. This time is the first time I noticed this, but it may be the last two times he's been here for whatever reason. I can still hear the radio. He's listening to a radio, but it's his phone now.
Yeah.
And it's in his pocket and he walks around and he's got this thing. His phone before this was probably a flip phone. So he kind of came on board, you know? The other example is my friend Chris, who I played basketball with last night. Another guy I grew up with, a friend of Steve as well. And, he's a big sports guy. He's a big athlete. And, he's not into technology for technology's sake per se, but I remember when he actually didn't own an iPod. Maybe he did eventually, but he got some kind of an MP3 player. It was really interesting because for a guy like that, he was always really into music and he always had cassettes in his car, CDs eventually. And, it was interesting watching him adopt this stuff because he was kind of one of those late adopters, you know? And now he has an Android phone, like everyone does, or an iPhone, but he has an Android phone. And it's the same thing. Like, when people like that make those transitions, when it's normal people, you know, that's when it gets very, very interesting.
Well, that's when it disrupts the market.
Yeah. For someone like me, like, I look to people like that. I always look at people I know, people I don't know, see what they're using, of course, you know, playing a train, whatever, out in the world. But I, my friends are particularly interesting because, like, you know, he makes these purchases without asking me, you know, like he doesn't, it's not like I consult him on all of these things, but he kind of does his own thing. And, Chris in particular was a really eye-opening thing for me with iPod first or MP3 players, and then later with smartphones, where when he sees the value of this, when he understands that he can get like sports scores on this thing right away, you know, and loves that and wants it and needs it for that reason, this thing has transitioned. Like he's my mainstream compass. You know, like when he adopts something, it's out there.
To me, it's my father, right? So I got him an iPhone 2 years ago, but he had no interest in it. He's like, I don't want this. I'm fine. He's like, it's confusing. It's too much. I see you're always complaining. Your battery's dying. I could not charge this thing for like 40 years and it's fine. You know, you have some flip phone. And he was sent, like, he started getting fascinated by text messages. The fact that it's so easy, you know, on this. So he got the phone and he would send me these incoherent text because he had a hard time changing, you know, typing on glass.
Yes.
Or he had a hard time just typing in general because he doesn't do it. So it would be like these, like, go from Z5993U, you know, and I had to decrypt what he was writing.
Did you have a stroke?
Yeah. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then I saw him do something amazing. I saw him, he came by and I saw him outside by his car and he's talking. He's like, no, I'll meet you in 15 minutes. And I'm like, who are you talking to? Like, I thought he's like, oh, I'm texting. I go, what do you mean? He goes, oh no, I just hit the button and I talk to it.
Fantastic.
And he's writing like full paragraphs now, just talking to the phone. And I go, this is the moment. This is the moment. Now he's a smartphone user because this was enough for him. Someone showed him how to do this and this is how he sends text and it's so easy for him. It's things like that. That's
over,
a defining moment. That's when you made the jump. You're committed now, and now you've gone over. Listen, we take that for granted. I never use it. You probably don't use it, but
my mother is. She's never going to handle this, but she has made me think about this stuff lately because she's blind basically, and she can't hear, and she's helpless in many ways. And I've got her computer now. I'm cleaning it up for her, and she really wants it back, but she never really uses it. And I think she thinks she needs it for her Wi-Fi to work or something. but my brother bought her an Echo, right? And she's not sure what to think of it. For some reason, she really likes on her phone that she can say, hey, Google, and or whatever you say to Google.
Yeah.
And okay, Google, she likes that. And for some reason, Alexa, there's something about it that bothers her. She says, I don't understand why I can't just say, hey, Alexa. And I was like, well... I'm like, it is weird that you can't choose the phrase that opens the thing up. But I mean, like, what's... I'm like, okay. But she... I actually caught her. She said something like... She was going to reference the Alexa thing. And she said, well, I don't want to talk to... And then she says, Alexa, I have to say it quiet. She's listening.
She's always listening.
It's like it's like this interloper in her house that she's afraid to speak, you know, openly in front of because it's going to pipe up, you know.
Did you...
it's just funny. It's funny the way people react.
Did you return your Alexa?
Yeah.
You did? Yeah. Why'd you do it?
We don't need it. It doesn't do anything for us.
That's an interesting mentality, huh? If something doesn't work...
Well, no, it works. I mean, for what it does, it works. It works the... Its voice recognition stuff is fantastic. I just, you know, I talked to my wife about it. I thought... I can hear her out there using it. She has added things to the shopping list. She uses it for timers. She plays, you know, starts music with it and that kind of thing. Asks about the weather. And so I asked her how it was going. I didn't go in there to return it. I just, you know, I heard her using it. I thought she was good with it. And she says, I think we should return this thing. I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, it's not completely useful. It's just, it's not necessary. And once I showed her, she could do the like voice shopping list on her phone.
Yeah.
She was like, okay, get rid of this thing. I don't need this. Cause we already have ways of playing music. We already have ways of getting the weather. We already, you know, it's sort of like my friend Dave said about the Apple TV when it was first launched. It was the most beautiful commentary on technology I'd ever heard. He said, oh good. Another way I can watch TV on my TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what is this thing? Like,
it's all interesting. Guys, before we wrap it up, I want to remind everybody, we do a bonus show here called What the Talk. If you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to be broadcasting it live here. If you're not watching live, you listen to the podcast, go right ahead. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us, and you get access to all these shows that we've been doing over the last X amount of months or weeks, whatever it is. You could go fund us anything you want, and it helps us continuing this because we got to pay for editors. We have to pay for producers. We got interns here. I got to buy him lunch every now and then. Deacon's here. He's hanging out. His name is Deacon. It's not really his name, but I call him Deacon. I don't know why. I told him one day he looks like Deacon. It
sounds like the name of a comic book graphic novel series.
No, he has like Deacon. this little goatee. And I'm like, he looks like your name is Deacon.
He came into town and he cleaned it up.
Yeah. Deacon the intern. I got to buy him lunch today. So go ahead. Patreon.com/whatthetechfund is there. Also, the podcast awards are coming up. If you want to help us out, you can nominate What the Tech in the technology section for a podcast award. Also, Matt Men podcast is also doing really well. In the sports section, you can nominate Matt Men for a podcast award. Also, nominations close on the 30th, podcastawards.com. You can go there. All thanks, Paul Thurrott. Paul,
yep.
Thurrott.com. Do you have paulthurrott.com?
I do.
You do. Does it go to thurrott.com?
I don't think it goes anywhere on the web.
No, it goes nowhere. No, it goes nowhere. Thurrott.com, go there. Great articles. Anything coming up? You were supposed to possibly be here today, and you're not.
Yeah, there's a reviewer event tomorrow, but I my son's prom is tomorrow, and I'm going away next week, and I just can't.
You gotta
can't
be. Deal with yeah. it. I get it. How much did prom cost you?
Ugh, I don't even know.
Was it $1,000?
Proms are not the same. I don't know. My wife has been handling this for my son.
Curious.
It's expensive.
Very expensive.
Stupid.
We'll talk about it on the post show.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Follow us, GFK Network, on Twitter. Hey, if you have an Android device and you have the music, what do they call this stupid? The Google Play Music? Right?
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Google Play Music? If you have Google Play Music, subscribe to the podcast on there. They now do podcasts, which I started using it, and I'm going to be using it more often because I want to actually see. It's not bad. You know, it's not terrible. I'm using the app more.
Yeah. I mean, I use Google Play Music for music. The podcast thing is it's okay.
It's okay. You know? Not bad.
It's not good enough to make me switch.
Yeah.
For podcasts, but it's good. It's good.
Yeah. It's not bad. They'll get there. All right, guys. That's it for this week. See y'all later.